Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. It's been more than a year since the police killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis. Since then, activist calls to, quote, defund the police have rung out in cities across the country.
Defund the police! Defund the police!
Chants from a rally in Oakland, California in June of 2020. Oakland has a complex history of policing. In 2009, at Fruitvale Rapid Transit Station, Oakland police kneed 22-year-old Oscar Grant in the head, forced him to the ground, and shot him dead. Similarly, though, or I should say actually at the same time, in some Oakland communities, residents say there is not enough police. In fact, this year, the murder rate is already higher than the entirety of 2019. And sometimes, 911 calls go unanswered for hours and occasionally days. Recently, Oakland Mayor Libby Schaaf proposed increasing the police budget by $27 million. That fell on unsympathetic ears, both on the city council and with Oakland activists like Jessica Ramos.
We have been defunding education for years. You see those budget cuts every year. We're not saying to, you know, cut the police, abolish the police. We're saying to locate those funds that the police have and have already a lot into different in communities and investing into education, into our social services, and into our youth.
Ramos spoke to CBS affiliate KPIX in June. Oakland Police Chief Laron Armstrong, who is Black and has lost his own loved ones to gun violence, says activists and even certain members of the Oakland City Council are disconnected from the communities traumatized most by high crime rates.
It's much different when you come out into the community and meet on the ground with those families. It's much different when you go into meetings in East Oakland in Councilmember Taylor's district. When you hear community members demand more resources, a stronger police response to shootings, when you go to 98th and you hear from senior citizen communities in Brookfield where they say they can't sleep at night, that's when you hear the real stories about what the need is in the city of Oakland. People are suffering, but their voices aren't heard when we have these meetings.
Ultimately, the Oakland City Council voted 6-2 against the mayor's proposed increase, and instead diverted more than $18 million towards civilian violence prevention programs. So what about that disconnect that the Oakland police chief talked about? It's interesting to note that the two no votes, the city council members who did not want to divert funds away from policing, they represent two districts with some of the highest crime rates in Oakland. So what do residents in the city's most vulnerable neighborhoods really want? How much does that align with, if at all, with activist calls to defund the police? That's what we're going to talk about today. And joining us now is Lauren Taylor. He serves as the District 6 representative on Oakland's City Council and was one of the two City Council members that voted against diverting the $18 million from the proposed police budget increase. And he joins us from Oakland, California. Councilman Taylor, welcome to On Point.
Thank you. Good morning, Meghna. Thank you for having me.
So, of course, what happened and is happening in Oakland is rather nuanced. There's still basically, the police budget is at historic levels, if I understand correctly. So we want to get as close to that nuance as possible this hour, Mr. Taylor. So can we just first start with, you know, when I use that shorthand for high crime neighborhood that you represent, what are the kinds of things that residents in District 6 are dealing with when it comes to crime?
Yeah, thanks for that. So I represent District 6 in East Oakland, Central East Oakland. And when I talk to my residents about public safety, they recognize that they are receiving the burden of having responsibility for more than two-thirds of the 911 calls for service. More than two-thirds of the gun violence is occurring in East Oakland, District 6 and 7. And when they call for help, they want someone to respond. They're not in love with the police. They recognize the shortcomings of the policing system. But at the same time, when lives are on the line, their family members, their brothers, sisters, neighbors, they want to make sure that someone can come and help improve the safety and the conditions on the ground. And
can I just jump in here? So when I when I read the fact that sometimes 911 calls to, you know, your district, or sorry, let me phrase it correctly. 911 calls made by residents in your district take hours, or have you even really heard of a situation or two where the call wasn't answered for what, more than a day?
It is common that our 911 calls, it takes a day. Someone shows up, you know, 36 hours later at 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning, because that's when our police were able to get to it and be able to respond.
Does that happen in the more affluent, less diverse districts of Oakland?
So there's a significant disparity between the affluent and the less affluent districts. And that's one of the things that we've been working on, is balancing things out. When I get emails about the call volume, outstanding calls, it's easy to have three times as high of a call waiting list queue in my part of the city as opposed to those others.
Can you tell me, I mean, you're a third generation Oaklander, right? Can you tell me about your family's history and even your own history as a person of color with Oakland Police?
Absolutely. As a Black man growing up in a major urban city, you're not far removed from the challenges that our community faces with public safety. I have my family who have been victims of gun violence. My aunt was shot in the face through an innocent bystander in a shooting in East Oakland. I have family who have struggled with being part of the criminal justice system, and after leaving incarceration, struggling to get jobs. I personally have been pulled over by police and stopped, racially profiled, if my skin color looked different, I would have been given the benefit of the doubt and or not even been pulled over at all. And so those are the situations, the experiences that I bring into this role when I seek to balance the need for public safety and response along with the recognition that we do need transformation of our public safety system.
So activists would argue that transformation can't fully begin until funds are diverted to violence prevention efforts or community building efforts that are not based on policing. So why did you vote against the city council's decision to divert $18 million away from the police budget?
So I think it's important to acknowledge that my vote in June, my no vote, was on a $3 billion two-year budget. Okay. And there are many things in there that I agreed with and many that I did not agree with. And unfortunately, those that I did not agree with, I felt were strong enough to cast that no vote. The $18 million being diverted from the police budget at a time when we are at historically high crime rates was something that I felt was unwise and did not center the voices of my residents, more than 50% Black residents, more than 20% Latinos, and what their needs are given the high crime rates, the high calls for service. I'm fully supportive of the investments into our Department of Violence Prevention, alternative responses to policing, those investments that help to empower our community and remove them from the difficult choices with respect to crime and involvement in that. But we have to look at the both and. Right now, the either or mentality is one that is taking away from really what our residents need.
So tell me, So tell me more about that, because I mean that's one of the reasons why I'm so grateful that you were able to join us today, and we'll hear from another thoughtful Oaklander here in just a couple of minutes. But there is a sense that nationally the conversation is either or. Right. In part driven by the media, in part driven by how some activist voices and efforts have been both portrayed and maybe are in reality. Now, you've had Defund the Police activists even protest in front of your house. Is that right?
I did. I had the protest in front of my house a couple times during the budget process. And, you know, those who showed up in front of my house do not reflect those who are in my district, who I hear from day in and day out, calling for help and calling for need. The demographic was different. When that occurs, it's important for us as elected officials and those who are representing the broader community to center those who are most impacted by the decisions that we're making. One of the things that I brought up during the budget process when I was trying to help modify and amend the budget in a way that was responsive to the needs of my community members was a $0 change, one that we would shift one police academy from the second year into the first year so that we'd have three the first year and then one the following year as a way of front-loading the number of officers we'd have to respond to crime. That request, it didn't take away from our investments into violence prevention or any of our other alternative responses, yet my colleagues were unsupportive of that shift. That was indicative of, it wasn't about the funding of the alternatives, but it was more about making it an idealistic statement around not supporting the increase in police, which my residents are calling for.
We have just about 45 seconds before I have to take my first break, Mr. Taylor here, but I want to ask you two quick questions. One, when you said the protesters, the defund the police protesters who protest in front of your house, that they were demographically different from residents in East Oakland. Are you saying they were more white than...
Yes. I had a majority white crowd when my district that I represent is majority people of color.
Well, we are talking about what's really going on in Oakland, California, regarding how the city is thinking about policing there, how to fund it, what the residents of the most vulnerable neighborhoods really want. And as City Councilman Lauren Taylor said, this is a both-and conversation. We'll continue it when we come back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're trying to understand Oakland, California's intense year of debate over policing in that major California city. The Oakland City Council recently voted to divert $18 million of funding from the police budget, which, by the way, remains at historic levels, to civilian violence prevention programs. That was after significant debate, as I said, in the city. And here is Oakland Police Chief Laron Armstrong in a press conference following this summer city council vote. Chief Armstrong says that homicides are up 90% in Oakland from a year ago.
Our shootings are up over 70% this year. Our robberies are up 11% this year. It's been 1,300 robberies in this city already this year. Our carjackings are up nearly 88%. So we see clearly that crime is out of control in the city of Oakland, and our response was for less police resources.
Now, we should note, though, that the $18 million diversion is quite different than the conversation that was going on in Oakland about a year ago, when there were calls to seek dramatic cuts of up to 50% of the police budget. That did not happen. So here's a little bit of how an Oakland resident, Jimmy Savage, feels. He spoke with CBS affiliate KPIX.
Conflicted in the middle, and if it does go to, like, preventive programs, that would be fantastic. But on the other side, in Oakland, there's never a cop around when you need one.
I'm joined today by Lauren Taylor. He's Oakland's city council member representing District 6, was also a co-chair on the Reimagining Public Safety Task Force as well, and is one of two city council members that voted in June against that $18 million diversion from Mayor Libby Schaaf's proposed police budget increase. We're going to hear from another Oakland voice here in just a second. But Councilman Taylor, there's one more question that I wanted to ask you before we further open up the conversation here. As I'm sure you know, your decision on this vote, and point taken from what you said earlier, that it was on the city budget as a whole, but you've received some criticism for it. I was reading some activist quotes saying that you represent the interests of police and the interests of development. And if you indeed claim to represent the interests of the people, that you should, quote, want black bodies to stop falling. How do you respond to that?
My response is that I'm representing the voices of those in my community. Mother Brown, who has called me and said she's afraid to walk on the streets at night as a senior African-American woman in our community. I've gotten calls from mothers who are prepared to leave this city because of the bullets that have flown through their windows in my district. So that's who I represent when I make these decisions around ensuring that we move forward towards the transformation that we need in reimagining public safety, but do so in a way that doesn't put lives at risk. Because the bodies that are falling in Oakland now, this year, the past 2 years, are not because of interactions with the Oakland Police Department. They're because of the street violence that's happening, and we have to acknowledge that.
Well, Lauren Taylor, stand by here for just a second, because now I want to bring in Keisha Henderson, also joining us from Oakland, California. Keisha's an Oakland native who's lived all over the city and now lives in East Oakland as well, and is also a District 6 appointee for the city's Reimagining Public Safety Task Force, which Lauren Taylor, by the way, as I said earlier, co-chaired. Keisha Henderson, welcome to you.
Hello, how are you?
So I'm doing well. Thank you so much for joining us. I wanted to start with the same question that I started with Lauren Taylor and turn that to you. I mean, what are the things that you've been seeing and hearing from community members in terms of crime and what they say they want from their policing?
Well, as far as in the community that I live in, I do live in one of the most high crime impacted areas in Beat. The balance of what, first of all, a lot of residents want balance with our public safety. So we would like to have funds directed towards rebuilding and empowering the community. But we also want to be able to have a better relationship with officers on the ground. We want better community policing. We want to be able to know our officers when they're arriving through. We want to be able to have our calls answered immediately. You know, nowadays, calling 911 is like calling the non-emergency number. Sometimes calling 911, you are actually waiting maybe more than 10, 15 minutes, or they may not even show up because there is a whole bunch of other emergencies that are happening across the city. And so residents are starting to feel, and even myself, where I live on a block where there's constant crime that is happening, that we're basically left to protect ourselves because there's not enough manpower and not enough things on the ground as far as our public safety. So we really want to balance, and we also want to feel heard in that that we want it to be one Oakland and not two Oaklands. And that's what's happening as well, is where When I lived in another part of Oakland, I've never experienced half of the public safety issues that is happening right now. Whereas now that I'm living in more of a high crime impacted area, it feels like even though I work a good job and I'm this type of person and that type of person, I still get treated as if kind of like my life is kind of either or, you know, like it kind of doesn't really matter. Your voice doesn't get heard. And so residents in my community want our voices to be heard. We would like to partner up with the officers and have more of a community-based relationship. But also, we also want resources funded in our community because I do have children. I have twins that are six. They're little girls. They cannot walk down our street. They cannot. We have a recreational center around the corner. They have never been to that recreational center because a lot of times if you go to that park, there is a lot of unhoused situations or there's a lot of drug transactions or as you may be playing in the park, there may be somebody running up and down the street with automatic weapons. Uh-huh. So it's a lot going on. And so we are it's an infrastructure issue. We are actually just a fully under-resourced community on both sides. So even though money has been given to, I would say, I think DBP, $18 million, I think the scary part about it is that's, for me, it's how are they going to address the crime?
Yeah.
I'm
so sorry to interrupt you, Ms. Henderson, but you've said a lot of things that I want to actually tease more detail out of. So first of all, and I want to hear from both of you on this. Can we just stick with the 911 calls and the delay in response? Because it's just a really concrete example in terms of what East Oakland residents are dealing with. Because from what I understand, to be clear, we're talking about still an overall increase in the Oakland Police Department's budget, but it's just smaller than originally proposed by Mayor Schaaf. But because the increase is smaller, I'm seeing here that it will result in the freezing of about 50 police officer positions that are responsible for responding to 911 calls. Is that right, Ms. Henderson?
Yes, I believe so.
Lauren Taylor, do you want to comment on that?
Yes, I can respond to that. So while the budget, the overall dollars increase, we have to also look at the actual service hours that we get out of those dollars. And so as costs rise, as there's a cost of living increase built into the police officer's contract, as other costs exceed, that just looking at pure dollars doesn't equate to the service levels that that are sort of commensurate with that. That's one thing that I wanted to emphasize. And then when it comes to the reduction of the surge response, yes, the budget reduced these two teams of responders to respond to 911 calls when they increase beyond a certain level. So during those surge times, and that capacity has been removed. I think one of the errors of my colleagues is that they are betting on the fact that we won't need the surge response in a year because we're implementing alternative responses that are hoped to take away from the overall call volume. So we've got an alternative response model that's going to begin its pilot phase in January. It's called MACRO, Mobile Alternative Community Responders of Oakland. And as an innovation management consultant prior to coming into office, I know that when you start something new, there's always the period of tweaking and improving, and it doesn't always work well the first time. And so I think that's a risky bet for leaders of the city to assume that this program we're starting in January of next year will be sufficient to draw down the necessary responses when we already have folks, as you said earlier, who are waiting sometimes days to get a response for their 911 call.
But I think in one of the in local Oakland media and the Oakland side, and one of your fellow council members let me see. I want to be sure I find the proper name. Anyway, I'll quote him properly in just a second here. But said that this is also a version of an either or. That's a false one. Oh, this is Councilman Thao, right? Said we need to reject the false choice between a police force or a community driven response. They're not mutually exclusive, he says. So what the council person said. So saying that the diversion of funds was appropriate for this time. What do you say, Lauren Taylor?
I think the words of Councilmember Tao underscore the point that I'm trying to make, and that is that when we have a backlog of up to 200 calls at any given time, then yes, this alternative response should be used, but it should be used to draw down so we don't have a 200 call backlog. It doesn't mean that we know that we are no longer going to need police to respond to those other calls that are already keeping them busy. And I think that's the thing that my residents are most concerned about, is that we are, it is a both and. We need to invest in both. We all agree on that. The question is, are we removing the safety net, the backstop that ensures that residents stay safe? And it's not just East Oakland residents. It's not just, you know, one part of the city. The Chamber of Commerce did a poll in November of last year where 58% of Oakland voters think that the city should maintain or even increase the size of the police force. And when it comes to the Black community, that number was even higher. 70% of Black voters want to maintain or increase the size of the police force. While that's being said, yes, the general sort of nondescript term of defund, folks in general agree with that. They think, hey, it sounds good. But when you get into the details of that, what that means is they want to invest more in those empowering, supportive, preventive solutions, but not to the detriment of their own safety.
Keisha Henderson, I'd love to hear more from you on this. Go ahead. Like, respond to what Lauren Taylor's been saying.
So to piggyback on what he just said, that yes, we do want more resources in our community, but we don't want to risk our public safety for it. I totally agree with that, because I think one of the things that happens that's a misunderstanding in my community is that everything that is occurring or every type of behavior or crime that may be occurring in our community, that it's all centered around mental health. And we do have mental health issues in our community that does need to be addressed. However, there is a 50-50 with that. Some people will play the mental health role to get out of some of the crime issues that they are actually doing. And that makes me worried, because if I'm calling the police about some crime or something that is happening in my block or in the community, I will be afraid if like for Macro, for example, if Macro gets implemented, which as it is, I think one of my biggest fears is that I'm automatically being told if I place a call that, oh, this is a mental health issue, and it's really not. It's actually more of a more serious issue. And that's kind of like risking my public safety, because I don't know. We already in this community, when you place a call for a service, for something, a lot of times our voices are kind of like not really heard, where if there's something serious, they may be like, you know, we've had officers that show up that, you know, to something serious and kind of be like, oh, well, we just need to pick our battle, or they kind of treat it as if it's not enough, or it's like, oh, you're just, it's just something small, when it's not. And then as soon as they leave, it escalates to a bullet through your house, or you might get beat up, or something else happens. So that is one of my worries, is that we do have mental health issues, but everything is not mental health. And they I want them to be able to know the difference of, is this an actual mental health issue, or is this actually an emergency? And a lot of times the other thing that happens is, again, there is two Oaklands. And what is not a priority in another side of Oakland, I would say maybe going towards the Piedmont area, things like that, It's a huge priority more going towards District 6 where I live in. And so that is the biggest fear for me right now, is that we have such this big type of trending you know, ball rolling towards everything is mental health, and it's really not.
And
there
so,
is, there is a balance.
Keisha, do you mind if I just ask for a clarification? So you said sometimes even when police officers do show up, they're not taking the concerns of the residents seriously. They're saying like the crime that was reported is not that big of a deal. Did I hear you say that correctly?
Yes, that is absolutely correct. And a lot of times, literally every time I place a call or residents on my block or my community place a call, I always request to speak to a sergeant. And that to me is a little bit insane, but I don't speak to a sergeant because I need to automatically place a report against an officer. But a lot of times, and I just actually did this last night, there was an incident that happened on my block. And when I called, I placed the call, I automatically said, I would like a sergeant to call me. And I do that every time. That way I can speak to the sergeant. I can really break down the situation, tell him like, this is what I need the officers to do. This is how we need them to approach the situation, because I don't want to waste time because we do have short resources, and I don't want officers to arrive and then it's like, oh, that's not such of a big deal, even if there is evidence shown to them, or they are sometimes afraid to approach the situation given the political issues that we are facing right now with law enforcement and with the residents.
Well, Keisha Henderson and Lauren Taylor, stand by. We are hearing from both of them and trying to get a nuanced view of policing and what residents in the most vulnerable neighborhoods in Oakland, California really want. More when we come back. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. I want to give you a little bit of a heads up on what we'll be talking about on the show tomorrow. We're going to be hearing from international affairs expert Tom Nichols, who argues that it's we the people, we Americans, every single one of us, who have put democracy in peril. He says that in this nation, whether you're Democrat or Republican or independent or whoever you are, we're going through a collective narcissism epidemic, and that we demand only the privileges of freedom and none of the responsibilities. So what do you think? When you look in the mirror, do you see yourself as part of the problem of America's broken politics? Leave us a voicemail at 617-353-0683. That's 617-353-0683. That's for tomorrow's show. We're going to be talking about whether the problem with America is us. Today, we are talking about what's really going on in the most vulnerable communities of Oakland, California. It's been a year since we've heard calls across the country for activist calls for defunding the police. And so we're trying to get a nuanced view about what the residents of Oakland's highest crime neighborhoods really want, because the city council recently, this summer, voted to divert $18 million of funding from the Oakland police to other civilian violence prevention programs. And here is the police chief, Laron Armstrong, who said in June that without the resources, without that $18 million, the department will have trouble filling key positions.
Key positions like our ceasefire officers, like our community resource officers, and like our investigators, all of which we need desperately. Our ceasefire team is our team that addresses violent crime in our city. And because our numbers are so low today, we can't afford to add any additional officers to that unit.
I'm joined today by Lauren Taylor, Oakland's council member representing District 6 in East Oakland. Lauren Taylor was also co-chair on the Reimagining Public Safety Task Force in the city of Oakland. Keisha Henderson is with us as well. She's an Oakland native who's lived all over the city, now lives in East Oakland, and was District 6 appointee for the city's Reimagining Public Safety Task Force. And District 6 is one of the highest crime districts in the city of Oakland. Oh, I want to ask both of you the following. You know, over the years, whenever any group, any city organization is faced with a budget cut, it's very natural that the first thing they do is say, "Well, we can't do these critical services if you cut our budget." Whereas maybe the threat of a budget cut or a budget freeze is exactly what's needed to motivate change, a rethinking about how you spend the money that is given to that public service. And if the last year and a half in America have shown anything, let alone the last many years, I think even if there's not support for quote unquote defunding the police, there is support for, you know, you both sit on this task force for reimagining the police. So why not use the leverage of the budget to force that reimagining? Lauren Taylor?
Absolutely. So first of all, I 100% agree that we must look at and really challenge hard how we are spending dollars within public safety. One thing to acknowledge is that our Reimagining Public Safety Task Force really did come up with some great recommendations, more than 35 recommendations on how we improve our public safety system. And core to what they brought forth is that police are not the answer to all things public safety. And that is a mindset that we have been really forcing and shifting within Oakland, but across the country as well. And so we had recommendations on increased transparency and accountability, increased investment into community solutions, and increased efficiency as you focus and allocation, reallocation within the police infrastructure. So we must push on that. One of the things that I guess didn't come up earlier is that we have a new police chief, Chief LaRon Armstrong, who is from Oakland, a black man who, unfortunately, his family, a victim of gun violence when he lost his brother on the streets. He has seen the good, the bad, and the ugly inside the police department with respect to racism and you know, the unconstitutional practices. And he has implemented a number of things that are shifting the investments into areas where it makes sense and improving efficiency. I continually challenge him. I think members of the community continue to challenge on that. But it's important to acknowledge that when we are dealing with a rise in violent crime, when we're dealing with an already, I will say, dismal response to 911 calls for service, when we're dealing with a low solve rate for crimes in terms of the clearance and, you know, actually seeing them through to having someone accountable when someone's family member is murdered in the street or when something occurs. That requires resources and investment. And it's important for us to maintain that balance.
Mm. Keisha Henderson, you were the District 6 appointee for the Reimagining Public Safety Task Force in Oakland. Can you tell us a little bit more about what the task force did? Were there people on the task force that sought, I don't know, as much as the abolishment of Oakland police?
Yes, we definitely had a mixed group. We had a few people that was a part of the task force that was more for completely fully defunding or completely abolishing the police, whereas myself and four other black residents that live in one of the most high crime impacted communities, we actually came together and sent the letter to the task force, to the actual co-chairs, and for the task force to try to implement where, yes, let's use some alternative responses and let's, you know, put more funding into the community. However, let's not ignore the most impacted center voices, especially Black voices in the community. So we don't want to just automatically just throw a change out there and no one knows how it's going to be. And it actually impacts the safety of others. And yeah. So we did have that balance. It was a very, I would say, tense few months because I kind of felt like I needed to, I was representing a very high crime district and that it, I still kind of felt like as much as I was pushing for balance, you know, balance with having alternative responses and balance with getting the proper services from OPD, it still felt like I was pushing against a mountain and I was not getting hurt, which is still what has been happening for years and what is continuously happening right now. So, yes.
So, Keisha, may I ask you, so when you said that that you felt that Black voices were not being heard, this is even on the Reimagining Public Safety on the task force?
Yes.
So who were the other louder voices? You're saying they were not Black, they were just not Black Oaklanders?
I mean, we had some voices that were Black Oaklanders, and then we had some voices that were not. But the problem is that some folks already had, I would say they already had ties with certain activists and certain groups that is all for completely abolishing the police already, aside from joining the Reimagining Public Safety Task Force. So they already had their agenda when they came in. So it wasn't, although we were all supposed to be reimagining, my understanding is we was reimagining together and making sure as we reimagine that there's a balance that everybody in Oakland, no matter what we choose, will benefit everyone's public safety from OPD's side and also from the community.
Well, because Ms. Henderson, what it seems, I don't know if ironic is even the right word here, but activists who are seeking, you know, significant defunding of the police say clearly and have said clearly that they are actually trying to center Black voices, and the effort to radically transform policing comes in order to protect Black Americans from the often unjust and sometimes fatal outcome of how policing is currently done today, and yet you're also saying that at the same time Black voices weren't being heard in that very process.
Yes. So, and there are activists who are definitely trying to center Black voices, but there's also some activists that has that either or mentality, like either, yes, I want to center your voice and we're both Black, but either you choose to get rid of, completely get rid of law enforcement, or else we're not talking to you. You're not really a part of what we're talking about, or you're not woke enough. And so it's an either or thing when it comes down to certain activists. And I think the problem is that we have kind of lost our way with this defund movement from actually accountability. When I was on the task force board, I was a part of the Community Policing Advisory Board, which was additional to the task force, and I and a few others, we had put together a document that went towards accountability for OPD and also changing the structure of how they address some of the most high crime impacted areas. And yet and still, when it came, when those recommendations got to the council, they didn't even, majority of the council just totally ignored the accountability part and for restructuring how OPD addresses our issues, our crime issues in Oakland. What they did is their main focus was, we're going to, you know, we want to look progressive. We want to feel and sound progressive. So we're just going to strip money. And that to me, we missed our mark with this task force board as far as accountability. Now, me as a resident that lives in the most high crime impacted district 6, and I live in one of the most high crime impacted beats for OPD. And my issue is that now that we didn't even put that in place, I still have to go through this whole infrastructure issue where our calls are not getting answered in enough time, when there's things that need to be investigated, where things are happening to people, that doesn't happen. You know, we don't get, when it comes down to having a certain type of I would say, officers and things that we might need for this community. We're not kind of getting them, or we get the officers and then they strip them away. So, you know, like the structure of OPD is something that needs to happen. I mean, even if we have more officers, it doesn't mean that they're going to be able to address things how they should if the structure is not yet
at any better than what they're doing now and what you need in the community.
Yes, so that's where we missed our
mark. Okay. Yes. So we've got just a couple, we're rapidly running down on time here, and there's a little bit more ground that I want to cover with both of you. Lauren Taylor, let me turn back to you here, because I think this is really an important point. I'd love to hear a little bit from you on. In seeking some kind of transformation for public safety, there is quite a valid argument that says you can't really achieve the scale of transformation you need. You know, these alternative public safety programs, which need time and money to prove their efficacy, without reducing police spending. There's not an infinite, like, pot of gold that the city of Oakland can turn to fund these programs. So decisions have to be made. I think the police budget is the largest single departmental outlay for the city of Oakland. Your response to that?
I think you're absolutely right. We do need to move forward and look at our entire budget and how things are being spent. This, when we look at making these investments, we need to also understand that the changes take time. The system that we have has certain things in place that our community relies on. As we seek to replace that with alternatives, it's important for us to not take away from the safety, even if it's not where we need it to be, that exists on the ground.
Mm. Now, you mentioned,
as an example.
Oh no, go ahead, please, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to emphasize we're investing tremendously in violence prevention. That is critical. We have violence interrupters who we're starting to hire for. We have other tools that are expected to be more of the long-term sustained support for community members to ensure that they don't end up down a path of violence. But that has a longer-term impact. That doesn't affect the response that's needed today. And so when I'm going to anchor back to we have to do both at the same time. And as we start to see the benefits of the alternative responses and see the benefits of the preventive investments and see those changes, we can draw down and we'll have more confidence to draw down. No one on the Reimagining Public Safety Task Force stated that we were going to get where we wanted to go within 1 year, 2 years, or 3 years. But what we created was a roadmap. And there are those variety of recommendations that came out that we are implementing. I think more than half of the recommendations we've either started implementing or in the sort of earnest planning phases for. Mm. That's setting us on the right path and on the direction. The question, I think everyone agrees that we want to get to that more proactive, community-anchored public safety system where police are a very small aspect of that. But the question is how fast we get there and what safety security mechanisms we ensure are in place as we are moving forward.
So to your point, I'm seeing here that some of that $18 million diversion from the Oakland Police Department is going to increase the Department of Violence Prevention budget by 50%. And that macro pilot that you talked about earlier about unarmed civilian employees responding to nonviolent 911 calls, also getting a big boost, up some $4 million to $6.2 million now. So
that's correct.
Yeah.
When you look at all the investments that we're doing into violence prevention, alternative responses, and others, it's much more than that $18 million figure. And so we are heavily investing in resources that our communities need, while at the same time making sure that we've got a minimal level of response that's needed to keep communities safe.
Well, one thing that's coming loud and clear over the course of this hour, thanks to you and Keisha Henderson, is that it seems that the very residents of the neighborhoods who are seeking help the most still don't feel as if they're being heard properly across Oakland. So we will keep paying attention to what's happening there in the Bay Area. Lauren Taylor, Oakland City Council member, and Keisha Henderson, Oakland native and appointee for the Reimagining Public Safety Task Force. thank you so very much for both of you for joining us today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices. And they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons. And there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.